I will be talking about the real story of the Mayan Indians, their calendar, their astronomy, and just for the for my own side of the recording here, I have to go back to the beginning. I'll say, just start at the beginning. This is April 9th, James McCanney Science Hour, 2009, and the main science topic tonight, I will be dealing with the Mayan calendar and Mayan astronomy, the real story. First, a number of announcements, and many things happened in the news this past week relative to international science, and it's very interesting. First of all, North Korea, of course, there was a lot of controversy over it launching a three-stage rocket with a allegedly a communication satellite as the payload. And even more interesting, as the rocket was launched, there was loud criticism from Japan, the United States, and some of the other European countries, from England. China and Russia were cautioning reservation, but of course, Korea now attempting to enter the space, the list of countries capable of reaching outer space. What was interesting was that NORAD, the North American Space Command for the United States, claimed that the rocket landed in the Pacific Ocean. And Korea, North Korea, claimed that the payload, the satellite, reached orbit and it was a successful launch. So, of course, when this happened, I looked for international sources. Interestingly enough, Russia came online and said that it detected the satellite going into orbit, and they, in fact, were at the time calculating the orbit of the satellite. Now, both countries, the United States and North Korea, had political motives for backing their own side of the story. And, of course, the U.S. press pretty much blanket stated that the satellite did not reach orbit. So when something like this happens, I set out to get the real information, and the last real postings on this occurred April 5th. So very interesting that there's no real information confirming, no third-party confirmation that, in fact, this satellite from North Korea made it into orbit or not. And there again, that's, as I've said, with the, for example, the U.S. space program. There are political motivations for people to say a certain thing or make claims. In these cases, it requires third-party verification, and in the case of the North Korea rocket launch, there is no available third-party verification. The only thing close to it, as I said, was after the launch, Russia made a claim that they, in fact, detected the satellite in orbit and were working on calculating the orbit. Now, typically, I should add, amateurs are able to see many of the man-made satellites that are in orbit and make a truly third-party, non-biased reporting, and then they'll tell when it's coming over a certain area. But the orbit of this particular satellite did not cross any of the Western Hemisphere. So it was launched from North Korea, went over Japan, and then towards the South Pacific. And so it really isn't in an orbit that facilitates amateur third-party verification. More on that. I will keep an eye on that and keep reporting on that. Very interesting story. Now, also, just a quick note on the G20 meeting. These are the top 20 economic countries in the world that they met last week in England, and of course, that was front page news for many days, dealing with the restructuring mainly of the international banks. Now, make no mistake about it, this was not a meeting about strategy for governments. This was a banking meeting. All of the banks, the world banks and their subsidiaries that are now well established in these top 20 countries made their appearance. And I thought it was rather comical that they told the bankers who were at the meeting to wear plain clothes so they couldn't be identified. It's probably the first time in their lives that any of these bankers wore something besides a suit. So that just tells you how sensitive they're getting regarding this. And of course, there were riots in England relative to the meeting being in London. I'm trying to think of, there was a sign that someone painted on a window there. Let me see if I can remember what it said. It said, "The bankers steal, the politicians lie, the rich laugh." That was, somebody had sprayed that on a window in England. And if somebody told me that they had seen that on the internet or on a news report. But a very interesting summary from the perspective of the average person on the street. Interestingly enough, also, Russia does not exactly trust the G20, and after the meeting put 10 metric tons of gold in a special Swiss holding location. So very interesting. Now, that translates to at $1,000 an ounce, which is just a rough value in U.S. currency, that translates to around $352 billion U.S. dollars, or a third of $1 trillion in gold. Now, I use the what I call the one-third rule, and with anybody who is hedging paper money against gold, this is somewhat of a rule that you store one-third of your dollar or monetary value in hard precious metals. And the reason for that is because if the currency, the paper currency, remains stable, then your gold will remain at relatively the same amount. If the currency drops by two-thirds, your gold value will typically rise by an equal amount, and so your total asset value will remain constant. And that's somewhat of a rule. In other words, if you had $1 million and you put $330,000 in gold, that would be about the correct ratio to maintain the value. No matter what the currency does or what the value of gold does, they will somehow equal. And then if the monetary systems completely go under, the gold will be worth 10 times more than the original monetary value. So that one-third ratio, obviously Russia using that same exact figure to hedge their own monetary system against the World Bank. Interesting. And so, interestingly enough, most of the news of the G20 dropped off the page like a lead balloon, and not a lot was said about it. But according to President Obama, in his particular closing speech, the G20 made a number of worldwide historical agreements, including making the World Bank, the IMF, International Monetary Fund, the central banking system in the world. So I think you all know what that means and what might be coming next. So the G20 meeting was more a meeting about banking, and it was more about uniting the top 20 countries with their banks, and then, of course, the governments would unite as one world government, China calling for a one world currency. So interesting, but the United States, I've said this before, has made many bad decisions in the last 10 years, and it's a time very much like the Middle Ages into the Renaissance period and then beyond, when England, Spain, Portugal, Venice, in fact, many of the trading countries vied for world domination. And interestingly enough, a little island in the North Sea called England came out on top. Now, England, you know, has very little, if any, natural resources, certainly didn't have any gold mines to talk about, yet they end up owning the vast majority of the world gold resources. How does that happen? Well, I think we all know it's not exactly written that way in history books. But I want to divert a topic here just for a moment about a small island country in the Caribbean called Cuba. as the United States is in a recession, with the entire country going under, the housing market, people are living in tent cities, Cuba has remained very stable, and of course that's not in the news at all. They've lived within their means. They were laughed at pretty much throughout the 1950s and 60s when they became independent, and of course it was very difficult. The United States put an embargo on them, told other countries they couldn't trade with Cuba, and basically Cuba struggled through this entire time. Now Cuba, which has lived within its means, has national medicine, free education for all, a life expectancy far better than that of the United States, and I could go on and on and on. But there are no bailouts in Cuba, there are no large insurance corporations going under, and there's no need to go take a loan from the World Bank. So isn't that interesting? Who's really the great winner here? Who's ahead of the game? Who has lived within their means and who has not? I might remind you also that last hurricane season, Cuba was literally bombarded with hurricanes five in a row within about a two-month period, and those obviously were very controlled hurricanes coming from you-know-who to try and break the island, but it did nothing but cause that little island country to become much stronger. So very interesting, they became more of a survival island than they were before. On to another quick topic. I talked about this once before, maybe many times before, about the green label. Everything is green. IBM routers, computers are green. Everybody's green, eco-friendly. And so this past week, oddly enough, in the Wall Street Journal, in the personal journal section, the D section, on Thursday, April 2nd, the Wall Street Journal ran this article. It says, "What do labels really tell you? As eco seals proliferate, so do doubts." And it shows a picture of a guy walking through a grocery store with green signs, good and green, eco okay, environmentally friendly, little green pictures on things. And so I said that everybody would make a marketing ploy out of being green. And so, because it was a way to sell your product. And so now the question is, with the plethora of the great increase in the number of companies claiming green and eco-friendly, how many of them really are? And of course now, if you see that label, people actually ignore it because they assume there might be some faulty advertising there, let's put it that way, or just trying to ride the green wave, so to speak, to sell your product. This past week also, very interesting in the science world, an Italian scientist had made measurements of increased amounts of gases around thermal vents and said he made a posting on the internet that he believed there would be some serious earthquakes in Italy. And so at any rate, the government scientists were called in and they told him that he had to remove his prediction from the internet and said that science cannot predict earthquakes, and ostracized the guy for doing this. And then of course there were huge earthquakes in which hundreds of people were killed, and it happened in the middle of the night and there was no preparation or warning. So now, what's the flip side of this? I actually have a posting on my webpage where I talk about the, this was many years ago when I, maybe a decade ago, when I started posting earthquake and other types of predictions. I made a posting and I said, you know, the Earth has many, characteristics that we don't know about, so predicting earthquakes is not easy. So all of a sudden a bunch of web pages popped up and said every time the sun would burp or every time there would be a comet in the solar system, and it was like, oh, everybody was predicting earthquakes. And then, of course, the Earth has many earthquakes all the time, so people started saying, oh, I predicted that earthquake because of the comet over there. So what they were doing was trying to sensationalize. And so I put a posting on my page, and I said, basically, these people don't know what they're doing. They're not geologists. They have no training. And so as a result, the Internet became kind of a Looney Tune place for every crackpot out there trying to predict earthquakes, and the end of the world is going to come tomorrow, and this comet is going to crash into Earth, when they really had no scientific background at all. So now you have a scientist who's actually making measurements. We have scientists in this country who are using predictive measurements to try and predict earthquakes, and they get laughed at, they get put down because of this, because of all of the other garbage on the Internet. But now understand a third aspect to this. A lot of the websites that produce disinformation, especially about earth changes and such topics, are government sponsored. Their goal is to put as much garbage on the Internet as possible, so when the real story comes along, it'll be drowned out in the overshadowing amount of garbage that's on the Internet. And of course, when I started becoming more and more popular with the public regarding my comet theories, regarding the formation of solar systems, all of a sudden, every crackpot in the world that wanted to make a name for himself tried to copy my material or put an Internet page up or whatever. So, and then the government comes in. Those people are very likely candidates to get a little bit of government funding so that they can keep their page going, make it nice and shiny and bright, etc. So anyway, back to the Italian earthquake story. That's what happened to this scientist, obviously doing some groundbreaking work in predicting earthquakes. And then the government white hats, as we call them, the government, the guys that wear the white hat for the government, come in and take him off the Internet when, in fact, he was right, they were wrong. Well, I think you get the picture. One last story. The Wilkins Ice Shelf is breaking off of Antarctica, the largest shelf to break into the Antarctic Ocean. And just remember, as I've said before, we are entering a warming phase on this Earth, also explained in my weather book, and of course I've talked about this many times, that global warming is not due to you driving your SUV up and down the road. The warming that is going on, Earth is just getting back to its normal state. When the dinosaurs lived on Earth, we had basically no glaciers at the time. It was semi-tropical all over the Earth. Just remember that about 4,000 years ago, possibly a little bit more, it's very difficult to put dates on this, but certainly within the last 10,000 years, Earth experienced a tremendous catastrophe brought to us from outer space by a very large comet, which eventually became the planet Venus. And I'll be talking a lot about Venus tonight as I talk about the Mayan calendar. But as the Earth recovered from that, the human race dug out of their trenches and started to repopulate the majority of the Earth, and eventually started contacting each other, the groups, various groups, throughout history, and we know that that's when human written history actually was started to proliferate on the Earth. And the point is that the Earth went through a devastation. The ice ages, the ice packs, the Antarctic ice shelf, all was created at that time. The old North Poles moved in about 30 to 40 degrees from their old locations and melted very rapidly. That's where we got the Mississippi River Valley. That's where we got the tremendous washes out in the Washington State area in Oregon. And that's where the tremendous washes that went from the Rocky Mountain region down into what is now Santa Fe, New Mexico, that region. The Earth went through a tremendous devastation back then. So what we are seeing is simply the Earth getting back to normal. And along that same line, Obama, his chief science officer in the White House, is claiming that they have plans on the table to shoot tremendous amounts of pollution up into the upper atmosphere to relieve us of global warming, to cool the Earth. Now, this to me would be like taking a pill to cure your pill problem. If somebody was a drug addict, give them more drugs so that they would get off their drug habit? I don't think so. This is just absolutely insane. But that's what happens when you get bad science in the White House, and then you get a president who is not a scientist, and he's looking for political clout. I see here the American Meteorological Society also has crafted geoengineering, as it's called. In other words, they're going to attempt to change the climate. And most of these attempts would be in the vein of shooting tremendous amounts of garbage pollution up into the atmosphere to try and block the sun. Now, can you imagine what's going through these people's head? These people are actually in power in the White House, on and on. So fasten your seatbelts as the mad scientists start to populate the White House and government officials start to take them seriously. Let me see, what other topics? There's an attempt also. Now, here's another scare tactic that just came across this past week. The Homeland Security is claiming China may have planted software bugs in our grid system control computers and is sitting there and possibly could take control of our electric grid sometime. So, of course, the solution is that Homeland Security needs control of our electric grid. Isn't that interesting? Why don't we fire them because they allowed China to do it? I thought they were supposed to be protecting this country. Nobody ever asked that question in the news media, however. Also along the same vein, when was it? A year or two ago, I broke a story regarding radio transmitters that would read your water, your water usage. These would go in your house. And now California is using these to prevent people from overusing water. If they use too much water, they are fined. And of course, I want to tell you that in flooding and heavy rain conditions, storm conditions, can be created by weather manipulation, and equally so, droughts can be caused by weather manipulation, simply by steering the storms away from places. So control of water is something that I've talked about before. And of course, the global warming ploy is a mask for the control of water. Make no mistake about it. That is the entire goal of global warming, is to control water. That's the number one issue that they are aiming for. But at any rate, I'm happy to say that some of the heavy hitter talk show hosts have picked up on this story and are actually giving it some airtime. So that's one reason my show has a bit of effect, because if those talk show hosts don't cover the topic, I will, and eventually that forces them to either cover the story or look a bit foolish. So at any rate, I'm glad that this topic is starting to get some airtime on the big daytime talk shows. Now on to, let's see, I have one more note here. This is regarding the melting of the Antarctic ice cap, the Wilkins ice shelf falling into the ocean, and of course scientists in the White House trying to proclaim we should broadcast vast amounts of pollution into the atmosphere to cure the alleged greenhouse or global warming effect. But none of them are talking about what to do with the ice that is going in the ocean. This is all fresh water. We have a great need for fresh water all over the world. So why not take the technology, take the effort, take the manpower that is being put into, say, warfare or who knows what else on this planet, and instead of blasting pollution up in the atmosphere, let's go spend our efforts getting this fresh water and distributing it to where it's needed on Earth. Gee, what a common sense solution to what is perceived as a problem. But it's a problem we cannot resolve on this Earth. Global warming is occurring. It's a natural effect. Earth is just getting back to where it was 10,000 years ago, prior to the great damage that came through the solar system and affected Earth, also affected Mars, took away Mars' atmosphere and oceans. So, at any rate, no scientists, especially those in power, are talking about the real efforts that we should be making, and that is getting that fresh water from Greenland, the Greenland ice shelf melting, from the melting and breaking up of the Antarctica ice shelves, to get that water and distribute it around the world. Okay, on to the next topic. Corn is a grain that came from the Western Hemisphere. The Aztec, Inca, Maya grew this, and this was one of their staple foods. In fact, they had a corn god called Quetzalcoatl. Very interesting. He had many other personas in the Mayan mythology, and I'll be talking about that. But as you know, the corn program, by the way, my corn seed program ended, and my goal was to take a descendant of the native corn that was still genetically sound and distributed around the world. That program is over. But I just wanted to talk a little bit about corn seeds. When they're sprouting, they give off quite a bit of acidy residue. And of course, the rain washes this away. But that's why you can't grow corn in the same spot year after year after year. You have to rotate crops. And in the jungle, where the soil is very thin and it only lasts a single year, they use slash and burn agriculture. And I just wonder if corn, or the lack of corn, or basically the acidifying of the land due to growing corn over and over again, was something that affected the modern Maya from and caused them to basically abandon their cities around 800 AD. Nobody really knows where they went, but there was a small remnant that remained until the Cortez came in the 1500s. But at any rate, the corn that is one of the main grain food sustenance of the Maya, Inca, Aztec, actually had a corn god dedicated to it, Quetzalcoatl. And interestingly enough, Quetzalcoatl was also the plumed serpent who was associated with rain, storm, wind, devastation, the creation of the new world. And so tonight I'm going to give what is really the first of a many series presentation on the Maya. And I want to mention also, many times I pre-announce my show topics, and tonight I specifically did not pre-announce it on the webpage, because this is a topic, watch tomorrow and through the next week, every Johnny Come Lately and imitation Mayan expert will be out on the airwaves because I'm doing these shows now. And of course, they are mainly government disinformation, small pawns. And the reason they're there is to cloud the true identity of the Mayans, the true story and the true history of the Mayans. Now, what I want to do is give you give a discussion of Mayan astronomy and their calendar, the basic units of their calendar, and then I'm going to talk about history. Let me start out with the history. The Mayans had many epochs, let's put it that way. Let's go back to around 4,000 years ago, and possibly it was earlier. There were vast cities in both South America and Central America, the pre-Coco, what we call the pre-Coco cultures, the Mayas, the pre-Maya cultures. I'm not talking about the Maya that we see today. When you go to Central America or Southern Mexico and you see the Mayan ruins, these were built by civilizations in around 800 AD and just prior to that. Now, the ancient Maya go back to about 2 to 4,000 BC, where they had tremendous cultures in that area. The Inca also had civilizations that went back into that time frame. Of course, when the Spanish came to Latin America, what we call Latin America today, these were the remnants. This was thousands of years after the earth-wide destruction. However, these civilizations maintained their mythology, much as we have carried on in Western culture, say Christian or other I wouldn't call them religions, I would call them cultures that started thousands of years ago, we carry on today. So these major events can influence civilizations and their mythology or religions, whatever you want to call them, for thousands of years, and that was very much the case with the Maya. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the calendar of the Maya, and this is the modern calendar. Understand that back thousands of years ago, the calendars were under a great deal of change. There was a great deal of flux, because the Earth no longer had its original spin rate, its axes were shifted, many things had changed on Earth due to the Great Devastation. And I've talked about this. My little pamphlet, Surviving Planet X Passage, goes into a pictorial analysis of how the world works and what would happen during a close passage of a very large celestial object by Earth, and how the poles would shift. It's not a 180-degree shift. It's more like a 30 or 40-degree shift. And this would be based on every event would be different. The next time this happens, which it will someday, and there's no indication of when that might be, but remember that the disinformation, people want you to put a date on this. Everybody wanted me, Jim, when is this going to happen? When is Planet X going to be here? That was the question I heard most often. And I said, if you have to ask that question, you're probably not prepared and you probably wouldn't make it that far anyway. So why are you even asking? And that's the answer I finally came to respond to people with that answer. If you're not prepared, why are you even asking? And if you're prepared, it doesn't matter because you're going to do as good as you can. In dire circumstances, whether it's a man-made event, whether it's a natural catastrophe, or based on Earth events, or something coming in the solar system from beyond. Preparation is all the same. So anyway, back to the Mayan calendar, and this is the modern Mayan calendar. Venus, let's look at Venus and what it looks like in its orbit. So imagine, take your fist and put it out, hold it out right in front of your face, and let's pretend that your fist is the sun. And now your eye is Earth, and let's imagine Venus. Okay, Venus is between us and the sun. Its orbit is nearly circular. Earth's orbit is nearly circular, and we go around the sun in 365 days. Venus has an orbit of around, 225 days is the orbit of Venus. So quite a bit less. But now, as we move around the sun, we're moving in the same basic direction, off to your right, in other words. Earth would be moving around the sun in its orbit, a circular orbit, and then Venus is between us. We go around the sun every 365 days and a quarter, if you want to be exact. And Venus goes around the sun every 225 days, quite a bit less. But as it is going around its orbit, we are continuing to move. So it actually takes 584 days for Venus to catch up to us, if you see what I mean. So this is what the inferior conjunction of Venus, it takes 584 days. Once Venus is right between us and the sun, which, by the way, happened this past March 27th, it would take 584 days for Venus to catch up to us again. Now, the Mayans noticed something very interesting, that for every five cycles of the inferior conjunction of Venus, that was exactly the same as eight of Earth's years. In other words, we would go around the sun eight times, come back to the exact same point, and guess what? Venus, we would have had five inferior conjunctions of Venus in exactly that time, exactly, not a day more or less. And so the Mayans were fixated on Venus, but that's not the reason. The reason they were fixated on Venus was because historically they knew that Venus was the cause of the devastation of Earth. So modern astronomers come along and they say Venus is in its orbit, it's a stable orbit, and they claim that it has been there since the beginning of the solar system. Totally an incorrect concept. Now, you have to understand that comets are not dirty snowballs. They can be Earth-sized or Venus-sized, large planet-sized objects, and the way planets come into the solar system and are adapted is by a capture. And in the case of Venus, it was well observed. The Mayan, every country in the world hands down the same story, that Venus was first recognized out by Jupiter when it developed into a large comet. It took, my estimation is that it took about 600 years for that comet to work its way into the solar system. It encountered Mars and took the atmosphere off of Mars and its oceans. Mars was a blue planet before that. And then on two occasions, about 54 years apart, Venus the comet affected Earth. The first time it was fairly devastating, and the second time is when, you might say, the shoe really dropped. And Venus then was continued to cycle into the area between Earth and the sun, and the comet tail drag is what caused Venus to cycle into the orbital position where it is today. Well, this happened probably, let's just say, about 4,000 years ago, but that is a hypothetical date. We don't really know. We just know it was back before then at some point. Some people like Velikovsky put it around 3,700 years ago. But the date is not important. What is important is understanding the theory that the comet tail drag allows it to, or causes it to cycle in, to somewhat spiral in and keep going in closer and closer to the sun. And eventually, it nestled into the orbit we see today. Now, very interestingly, Venus always points the same side of its planetary face, always points the same side towards Earth, much like our moon. We always see the same side of our moon. That is called a phase lock, and it's the only way that could have happened is due to Earth and Venus being in close proximity. The other interesting part of this is that Venus is in this cyclical lock with Earth's orbit, which is on an 8-year cycle. As I said, five inferior conjunctions of Venus is equal to 8 of our years. So this is somewhat of a complicated topic for many people who are non-amateur or non-astronomers. But the point is that let's take Chichen Itza, one of the main Mayan central capital cities in southern Mexico. There's a place called the Coracal. It's the observatory. Some people just call it the observatory. But it's obviously a round cylindrical building with a dome on the top, and its windows are set up to study not the sun, not the moon, but Venus. Why would the Mayan culture in 800 AD be so preoccupied with the cycles of the planet Venus? Why would they build the central astronomical building of that city not to observe the sun, not to observe the moon? Has nothing to do with the calendar that cycles with the sun and the moon. It cycles with the calendar of Venus. Their main astronomical building is designed around the orbit of Venus. What it does is it clocks the morning star, when Venus is the morning star, when it is the evening star, and during the inferior conjunction, and then when it is on the far side of the sun. These are the four phases of Venus, clocked by the main observatory in the city, the Mayan city of Chichen Itza. Now, I got a kick out of this on one of the web pages, and I forget where exactly I saw this, but somebody had taken the Mayan number system and created what they called a calendar. And they put the numbers in as a month, date, and year. And they said, and then they had the picture of the Coracal, of the Mayan Chichen Itza Observatory building, in the background, and they said, here is the calendar that says December 21st, 2012. Obviously done by an amateur who has no idea, absolutely no idea, what that building was built for. It wasn't built to reflect December 21st, 2012, which is what all of the big hoopla is about today, and it is in no way related to the Mayan calendar. The Mayan calendar cycles around the planet Venus, which has nothing to do with December 21st, 2012. So I just want to make that clear. Now, once again, why did the modern Maya, why were they so preoccupied with the planet Venus? Because they were told, the legends were handed down, that if Venus came out of its orbit, it would be the one that was destructive of Earth. The Mayan also had a celebration, very much like the Passover. Now, the modern Judeo-Christian observation of the Passover is when the Israelites were leaving Egypt, they were told to close their doors, basically batten down the hatches, do not open it for anybody, and to paint blood from a lamb over the top of their door. This was the Passover, and then that lamb was to be cooked and eaten during the Passover. And they were not to come out of their houses. The Maya have the exact same ceremony, but they do it not annually. They do it every 54 years. And the reason was because that was the cycle of Venus coming back and destroying Earth. Now, another thing I want to make clear, there's a lot of people that talk about what is known as the long count calendar. And this is the one that they try and associate with 2012. They try and associate this with 2012 and talk about the December 21st, 2012 date. The long count calendar of the Maya is not related to our 365-day calendar at all. Not at all, not at all. Let me repeat that once again. The Mayan long count calendar is based on a 360-day cyclic period. It is not related in any way, shape, or form to our current 365-day calendar, which they are trying to use to say that the Mayan calendar comes to a zero date on December 21st, 2012. The other misnomer is that the Mayan calendar is based on the heavens as they were in around 800 AD. The situation in the heavens prior to about 4000 BC, there is no relationship. In other words, the ancient Mayan spent a tremendous amount of time rebuilding their calendars, as did all nations around 3 to 4000 BC, after the great catastrophe, when the Earth's axis was shifted, when the cyclic time of the day was changed, when our year was actually changed. And so the time frame for recycling the calendar was long ago. At any rate, the calendar, the point is that, and this Velikovsky makes very clear, and by the way, I will repeat this again, I've said this many times, that Velikovsky was not studying astronomy. And a lot of the professional astronomers that walk around with their noses in the air saying that Velikovsky had been disproven, the astronomers think that Velikovsky, that he was making some type of astronomical projection, when in fact he was studying calendars. And what he was showing was that all of the calendars in the world in that time frame were, in fact, changed. And everybody was working drastically to get the calendars back in order. So the calendars of the modern Maya have nothing to do with the calendars as they were thousands of years earlier. And the point of building observatories in 800 AD was to track the skies as they were at that time. So the modern city of Chichen Itza being built in that time frame, just prior to 800 AD. So at any rate, the point of this is to give you kind of an initial instruction on the true Mayan calendar, not the one that you read about in these glossy books that are being put out on the internet by people who know absolutely nothing about Mayan archaeology, probably have never been there, and certainly don't know what these buildings even mean. Now, let me talk a little bit about Quetzalcoatl. Once again, Chichen Itza being dedicated to the corn god Quetzalcoatl. And one other thing you notice is that the pyramid, the steps going down, have a snake-like structure with the heads of the snake, the serpent, down on the ground with the big tongue out. Now, they always have the big tongue out, and that is the sunward spike. Quetzalcoatl, one of his personas, is the plumed serpent god of the night sky. And so this, of course, is the Great Comet. And as legend has it, Quetzalcoatl ruled the night sky for a period of about 600 years, and his heart eventually became the planet Venus. This is when the Great Comet started to circularize the orbit, and the tail pretty much disappeared. Now, remember, a few weeks ago, I predicted that the end of March would be a rather formidable weather period at the end of our winter in the Northern Hemisphere. And that was because the tail of Venus, which still exists a little bit, certainly not visible like it was at one time in history, back thousands of years ago, but Venus still maintains a tail, and of course, in that tail is a place where viruses are generated. The Chinese have studied and clocked the virus production, what they call the swine flu, going back to the 1200s, and associate it with the inferior conjunction of Venus. This is also well documented in medical journals, that we typically have an expansive flu season during the inferior conjunction of Venus. But additionally, we lock in electrically with Venus during that inferior conjunction. And in fact, that was the cause of the severe weather at the end of March. We had overland hurricanes repeatedly coming over the North American continent with snow, late season snow, blizzard conditions. And the people who live here realize that, but I was able to easily predict that because of the inferior conjunction of Venus and the fact that Earth would be going through the tail, which still exists, the comet tail, very nebulous, very faint, only detectable with spaceborne equipment. And we've actually seen the tail of Venus flare up multiple times. Now, just another quick thing before I close out this particular show on a little character, not so little character, that is resident at Chichen Itza. Now, if you've been there, you've seen this, or if you haven't, these pictures are on the internet or in books. But there's a character there who's sitting down kind of in a crouched, laying on a, kind of like sitting in an easy chair. And the French gave this character the name Jacques Moule. And that's actually a French name because they didn't really know what to name him. Now, we've all seen pictures of the Mayans. I've, of course, lived down there. I've studied down there. I've been in the jungles. I've been side by side with the Indians that are the remnants of the Mayans, and they're very small. They're about 4 feet tall, very slight, almost like little birds. They seem so small. But this was the Mayans were very small, slight people. And as I say, probably a maximum of 4 feet tall. And they have a very definitive facial structure, body structure, etc. Well, Jacques Moule is about a 6'6" Scandinavian looking man, and he's in a central position in the pyramid structures and in many outlying areas in the grounds in Chichen Itza. Where did a guy that is about 6'6", tall, slender, Scandinavian looking, with moccasins, with fringes on the moccasins, just like you would expect a Norseman to have, where on earth did you get a character like that in the world of the 4-foot Mayans back in the 800 AD era? Very interesting, but I encourage you to look for that. As I said, Jacques Moule, the way it's spelled is C-H-A-C-M-O-O-L, Jacques Moule. And as I said, this is a French name. That's certainly not a Mayan name. And one of the absolutely funny things about Mayan archaeology is nobody wants to talk about that particular character. He's certainly out of place. He does not look like a Mayan in any shape or form. What exactly was he doing there, and why was he a central figure in the pyramid structures at Chichen Itza? Well, what's very clear is they said, the Mayans, Indians, legend said, that Quetzalcoatl, the personification, the person that brought them corn, was a tall, blonde-haired, blue-eyed person. That's pretty interesting. So when exactly did corn come into the Western Hemisphere? And the other natives also, the Aztecs and the Aztecs and the Incas also had a similar story, that corn was brought to them. And of course, the Mayans are very specific that it was a character, tall, blonde hair, blue eyed. Well, gee, that sounds like a certain Nordic group of people. And we know for a fact that Korn was in existence far back into the distant history. So, probably prior to the Great Catastrophe, where Korn was developed as a small plant, a small grain-like plant, and then through natural selection, developed into what we call Korn today. Also, I want to make it very clear that in the Mayan archaeology, in the Mayan mythology, that Quetzalcoatl had two personas. He was man and God. And in the form of God, he was the serpent god of the night sky. And as we look back in history, whether you read the Colbran, whether you read the other ancient texts, as Velikovsky has pointed out, when this comet came through the solar system, it stretched from one end of the sky to the other. It was a raging comet. They called it the bull because it had the horns of the bull, so to speak, were plasma effects that came out the sunward side of the comet. And these were like auroral type effects, probably purple, ultraviolet, and we know from the Hopi Indians, they talked about the blue comets being the dangerous ones. The blue comets were the comets that were the most dangerous to Earth. And that's why they talked about the blue Kachina, the red Kachina, and the dangerous levels of these comets. And of course, those refer to comets of old. Some people, the Hopi Indians, believed that Hale-Bopp was the blue Kachina. Now, in upcoming installments of this, and I'm not sure if I will continue this particular topic next week, I'll see what the public reaction is, but the point is that you have to understand who Quetzalcoatl was, how the solar system formed at that time, how Venus was not a planet prior to that time, how it nestled into its orbit, and in fact, how Venus the comet came in and became what we call Venus the planet. And work this into Mayan archaeology. Now, what I think is almost comical is when archaeologists, well-trained archaeologists, go into Mexico, they totally ignore all of the facts regarding Quetzalcoatl. They just kind of gloss over it. And all of these associations with Venus are totally, totally ignored. At any rate, I'm about out of time tonight, but I will continue this topic and go into more depth with Mayan archaeology, the Mayan calendar, and Mayan astronomy. This is Jim McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.